Listen up. I hate to have commercials interrupt this interview, so I'm going to tell you about three sponsors quickly now, and then we're going to go right into the program, starting with Walker Corporate Law. If you need a lawyer who understands the startup world and the tech community, I want you to go to walkercorporatelaw.com. Next, I want to tell you about Shopify. When your friend asks you, "How can I sell something online?" I want you to send them to Shopify and explain to them that Shopify stores are easy to set up. They increase sales, and they'll make your friend's products look great. Shopify. Finally, I want to tell you about Grasshopper. Do you want a phone number that people can call and then press 1 for sales, 2 for tech support, etc., and have all of the calls be routed to the right person's cell phone? Well, get your number from grasshopper.com. All right, let's get started. Hey there, Freedom Fighters. My name is Andrew Warner, and I'm the founder of Mixergy.com, home of the ambitious upstart. In this interview, I want to find out, how does a founder build a multi-million dollar business that sells education online? The short answer is by going after professionals who actually have money and a big need. But you and I are not here for short answers. We can't build our businesses on quick, short answers. We want details. That's why I invited today's guest here. His name is David Schnurman. He is the founder of FurtherEd. The company is built on the fact that lawyers, accountants, real estate brokers, and other professionals have to continue their education. FurtherEd allows them to do that online. David, welcome.
Andrew, thank you. It's a pleasure to be on your program. I've watched many of your interviews, so it's very exciting to be in the hot seat.
Well, thanks. I'm glad you're here. So what makes it the hot seat is that I ask questions like revenue right up front.
That's not a hot seat question for me.
I can see that actually. Why isn't it? You're about to say to people what your revenue is with this business. Why is that not a hot button question?
The challenge to execute a business, I've gone through many different levels of entrepreneurship, and I'm very big on reading, and I actually have a show similar to yours that I'd started and was unable to continue because I'm busy in my business. I find ideas and sharing is the best way to grow. In the beginning, I held so tight my ideas. I didn't want to share anything because I was afraid someone would steal it. It is so difficult to execute something that I find the more people I can share with, the more people I can open up to and tell them where I'm at and what we're doing, the more I grow. And it's always shown to be the truth. In certain situations, obviously, there's certain knowledge and proprietary knowledge you have to keep. But in most situations, especially when I'm among entrepreneurs who are trying to grow, I like to share. So the question was, in terms of revenue, we're about $6 million in revenue, but significantly on pace to grow much more than that in the next year or two.
What size profits are you guys doing on that kind of revenue?
That is an interesting question. We can be much, we're very profitable. Because we get contacted probably once or twice a month by investment banks or private equity fund. And generally when they're looking to invest in a company, just an FYI to entrepreneurs out there, they say the term 10-2. They're looking for a company that has 10 million in gross, 2 million in EBITDA. So we're about half of that, or more than half of that on both levels. But we spend a lot of money on our culture, a lot of money on our infrastructure. As a growing business, you don't want to have as much profits because you want to be able to sort of build the company. So you always have to make that decision. Do I want to pay a dividend or do I want to reinvest the money? So right now, I reinvest the money. We're completely organically grown too. We've never raised money. So we're
very... What's the biggest expense in a company like this? I mean, I'm looking at your site and there's software, but the software's already built, even though it's being updated, it's built. You've got videos, but that's in your case, 3 camera shoot. You don't have this amateur operation that I have with just my webcam.
We got 7 cameras, but
7 cameras?
Well, we have 3 camera robotic cameras that we were talking about before the interview, that we have a joystick, it controls it. And then we have, before we did that, we bought those $4,000 HD Sony 3-chip cameras. So we have lots of those as well. And we don't use them as much as we used to, but when we go on location, we take those with us as well. So I used to be, when we first were starting every year, right before the end of the year, I'd be like, okay, my accountant would say, is there any expenses that you have to do now so you can pay less taxes? And that's when I'd usually buy a couple cameras in the first each time. So every year I would buy more and more cameras. But now, you know, we don't have to wait till the end of the year to figure out what our profit's going to be. Now we just buy what we need.
And you do that because if you're teaching people online, you want to keep it interesting and You're teaching law, you're teaching accounting, you need all the help you can get in keeping things moving.
So the most important thing that I realized, and clearly you did too, as I'm pointing to your microphone, my first camera that I had was a $200 camera that I got as a honeymoon present. But what I didn't buy was a lapel microphone that connected it to the presenters. I literally would show up at law offices with a $200 camera. I was almost a little embarrassed, but I didn't care. It was like this big. It was a HD tape put in there. And then the first 2 years, that's what I used for our video equipment. And then as we grew, I said, well, let's get the quality better. Let's start doing HD. Let's doing different things. And when your core business, when we have 1,300 hours of videos and content, it's such a small expense compared to what we're doing. You got to keep growing in that area.
I see. And that's what you
said. I love it. That's the creative side, building.
You started out with just taking a camera into a law office, having a lawyer teach, and then you posted it online, and that's what you were selling in the beginning.
Correct. So I first started in law school a TV show called True NYC. And that was I was the first one, believe it or not, that I knew of. There was Venture Voice, which you may or may not know. It was me and Greg from Venture Voice. He was in video, though. I was the only one. I paid $250 for a guy to build me a site where I can upload the videos. I used Dreamweaver to upload it, and I started interviewing entrepreneurs. I actually had a public access TV show and then put it online. The reason I did that was I would read books like Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and all that, the whole series, and I would love those books. I'd get a lot out of them, get energized, but you really wouldn't learn how to start a business. So I said, I'm sick of doing that. Let me talk to the entrepreneurs on the front lines and see what makes them different than me. Because I never started a business at that point. I'm like, and I wanted to know. That turned to that process is what led me to meet the web development company, Richard Banfield, which we can get into, who actually I was my first web development company for the first 3 years. But yes, to answer your question, I would just show up at lawyers' offices with a home camera, film, and that was the first 2 years of the business.
I see.
No, I put.
But it's unrelated to what you're doing now.
So True NYC is unrelated, but when I did the first continuing education, that's completely what we're doing now. Mm-hmm. And we, like I said, we started with credit cards, essentially, and we were able to fund from there. So I've always been very lean. I don't like to spend more money than I need to, especially on equipment. So I let that go as long as I could. The reason I had to get a new camera is the tape deck broke, so I actually couldn't use it anymore.
All right, let's break down the process that got you from a guy who didn't know how to build a business, and you were just reading Rich Dad, Poor Dad and wondering, how do I meet real entrepreneurs to learn from them, to a guy today who's doing over $1 million in profit a year, selling education online and growing. And it started actually in law school, you said. Why'd you go to law school, a guy with such an entrepreneurial vision?
Yeah, so before law school, I spent 5 years in the online advertising space. I went to GW, graduated in 1999. I went to a company called 24/7 Media. Mm-hmm. It was during the height of the dot-com era. It was the best transition from college, because essentially it was college. It was all 20-something-year-olds. Every night was another open bar. And I learned a lot in that space. I was in sales. For 5 years, I was in sales, and I did really well. I went to several different companies because lots of transitions then. But at the end of the day, I was just sort of unsatisfied. I was just like, well, what's next? What's next? My dad's a lawyer. He's been a personal injury his whole life, my whole life. And all he ever wanted me to do was go to law school. So, of course, that was the last thing I ever wanted to do. But after 5 years, I wanted to learn some more, and actually became – I left the job I was at. It was right after 9/11, where I just sort of said, well, I took a step back and I said, what's going on? I was – literally right around the area, and just seeing it was just a big moment for me, and I left probably a few months later and I became a real estate broker. I took the test, I started doing that. I really loved the studying of the test, and then I said, well, if I love this, maybe I'll like going to law school, because I love the thinking part. Yep. So then I felt more mature and I said, I want to be a professional, I want to have a career. So to answer, that's how I ended up in law school. I wanted to have one thing for the rest of my life. I felt like I wanted to be more than just a salesperson. Mm-hmm. And I didn't see my career changing with that. And so that's why I went to law school.
And then there was an incident that made you cry. What?
So that one was interesting. That was my second year of law school. In law school, you got to work at law firms for the summer to build up your resume. I was working as at a bank attorney. So who does closings. So if you have your, I don't know if you've ever been to a closing in New York, but in New York, everyone goes to closings. Your paper's piled up this high where you go through stuff. The first week, they sent me on a closing. I was by myself. They said, okay, do all this. Luckily, I figured it out, but it wasn't my strength because it's very detail-orientedness, you know, lots of papers. So I did it all summer, and I was supposed to stay there for the year, and I decided it's not the right fit for me. I told the attorney who I worked under that I'm not going to stay, and all of a sudden, he just bawled me out. He said, what do you think we hired you for? This summer was a gift to you. It was to be here all year. And just told me he wasn't going to give me a reference. He wasn't going to let me pass through. Just reeled me out. I was in shock. I left on the spot, and I walked out, and I just started crying. And I just like, what just happened? I can't believe what happened. And I said to him, and I realized, based on how the experience was there, I said, being an attorney actually is no different than a salesperson. The only difference is you have a degree, but the only way you're going to grow as an attorney is if you can get clients and you can have that personality and you can grow. If not, you're going to be in the back end doing something and being a happy guy like that. And so that's when I made the decision. I said, I'm never going to put myself in a situation where somebody who is like that is screaming at me. So that's when I started True NYC.
And True NYC was going to help you learn about entrepreneurship by talking to real entrepreneurs.
Yeah, and my goal was to turn that into a full-time company and make revenue and do it. To be the Mixergy of 2001 or whatever. And then I can keep going, or I'll just go to the next question. I don't want to just constantly.
I'm curious about where the idea for Further Ed came from.
Sure. So it's been up until 6 months ago, the name has been lawline.com. So the 30-second version of the story, in 1999, my dad and his partner, who were personal injury attorneys, it was when continuing legal education became mandatory in New York. They decided to build a website. This was during pets.com. The whole dot-com boom, they put a lot of money into it. They wanted to partner with a lot of other providers in other real estate and accounting, build this big company, go public, make millions of dollars, and retire. Nice dream. And
unlike some of those other ideas that you mentioned, pets.com, for example, this was built on a solid idea. I mean, the realization was, lawyers need, in fact, required to get continuing education. Why not do it online? It sounds like a sound idea. It sounds like a sound opportunity to pursue, right?
Yeah, it was a very sound idea. Two things that they didn't have going for them was when the market crashed. Again, they were thinking of going that public, getting stock and all that. Nobody was doing deals.
That wasn't going to work.
And my dad actually didn't really like the whole going back and forth of that. And the second thing was they were a little too ahead of the time. They were actually doing video in 1999. Which I guess is not that long ago, but it felt like it's 15 years at this point.
I mean,
or whatever
think about they were probably requiring people to use real media to watch their videos.
That's exactly what we were using, real media, and there's still a lot of dial-up. And there's still audio. The fact is, if they vested their time and energy into it the right way then, they probably could have made it grow. But they made the decision to just go back to practicing law. They had about 15 courses, and they kept those up there and renewed them every year. And so my dad doesn't like to throw anything out. He's a very entrepreneurial mind in that sense. And luckily he didn't. And we had the brand that had been there for 5 or 6 years. So I said, and people, they were getting what, $5,000-$10,000 a year in revenue, and not a lot, but they didn't own the software. They didn't own anything. They all licensed that out. And I just said to myself in law school, if a company can make money without anybody paying attention to it, what would happen if one person put 100% of their energy into it? And so I negotiated with them to sort of say, well, you have nothing, give me the brand and everything, let me take that and start a new company and form it and use the Lawline brand. And so I before I graduated law school, I hired Richard Banfield's company, who you've interviewed, Fresh Chilled Soil, who amazing. They built the company, a framework of it, and then the first 3 years they were a development company for us. And so I graduated, went, picked the bar, and day one I was by myself with two law student interns who were my friends.
And this is where the business started.
That's where it started.
How did your dad and his partner get customers and get them to stick around even when he wasn't paying attention to the business?
Google. You know, people, so luckily people would just, you know, it's a very search-driven business, you know, mandatory continuing education, they find the site and they would buy it. But the way it was set up, you can only buy one course at a time. We didn't even control the money. Like, it went to another provider, so they would send a check once a year, and they were paying, Lots of money in hosting back then for nothing. You know, what you pay $7 for, you're paying $1,000 a month or whatever.
Here's what I got from the pre-interview questions that Jeremy asked you, Jeremy Weiss, our producer here.
He's great, by the way.
He was, isn't it? Isn't he terrific?
I like him a lot, yeah.
You can only buy one course at a time. There are no cart features. People had to re-enter their credit card information for each individual purchase. The site looked black and it was narrow, too many options on the homepage. There was and you were one man doing everything. When you took it over from your dad, did you start from scratch or did you keep what was there?
So we had to rebuild it because we didn't control the site. So I would not start a business where I was not in control of the money. It's just not the right way to do it. So that's what Richard Banfield did. We paid
Okay.
him $2,500. What we did was we took the basic framework of what the site was, so we didn't have to like think about that. They sort of used that as a guide to build that basic framework. And everything that we've done since then, we built it in phases. I could have built a cart, I could have done all these things, but it would have cost more money. So as we made more money, we added new features. And that's how we built it up.
So what's the first feature that you added?
The best feature that we added, I think I told Jeremy, was bundles. I didn't make it up. I saw one of the competitors did that, and I was able to put all the courses into one bundle. So you still had to do your credit card every time and all that stuff, but instead of buying a $40 course, you'd buy a $300 course.
I see. And so you said, Richard, I need you to do everything here. We need to start over from scratch, essentially. But the very first thing that I'd like you to work on is creating bundles for me.
So to just no, the first thing he did was build the site,
Okay.
and then just to take it one step back, just to give you 30-second background,
Mm-hmm.
the way I met Richard, he had something called Startup Business School at the time, and he was through networking. Someone else put me in touch with him, and through that, he actually offered to build True NYC, which is a site for free for me because he believed in what we were doing so much. So him and Alex built that, and then we started the relationship. And 2 years later, or a year later, went to Lawline. He always says to me, "I should have invested in Lawline." And it's because he was like, "I was like, oh, we'll partner, we'll build that up." So the fan just went on. Is that okay for sound?
You know what? If you could turn it off, it would be helpful.
Yeah,
I don't
can
hear
I get up?
everything.
I have to get up to do it.
Yeah, let's go for it.
Okay.
Don't sweat it. I actually never notice this stuff because I listen on the
I'm
speakers
leaving the room
regularly.
for a sec.
Yeah, go
Yeah.
for it. But I know that you guys in the audience, you hear it because you're listening on earphones. Probably should have earphones in the interview, but I found that anything that says to the guest that this is an interview, or if I do it too much, then they're way more aware of the fact that there's a question. And
I was
frankly,
out
the
of the
mic is
room the whole
enough.
I was out of the room the whole time you were talking.
Great. Yeah, I know. I was just trying to keep it going because I didn't want to edit anything out.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No. I was saying that I find I should wear earphones so that I can pick up on audio issues like that. But what I'm finding is that the more I show the guest that this is an interview, the more it feels like an interview, the less relaxed they are and the more cautious they are. So have a mic that lets them know it's an interview, but anything more than that, I want to disappear so that it feels like we're chatting. I love it at the end where people go, "Damn, I can't believe I said that to you." Do you edit?
100%,
I say no.
100%.
So wait. So going back, you're saying that the first thing that you asked him to do was redo the site.
Yes.
Okay.
So the main thing for us that we needed is to get, for me, is to get the money to us. The second thing was to build the bundles so we can make more revenue.
And so
And
you
the third.
mean take the shopping cart experience out of someone else's hands and put your own shopping cart on
Exactly.
the site. I see.
100%.
Okay.
And then what we created an arrangement where one of their developers essentially worked for me 2 days a week. And then it was sort of constant updates and upgrades.
Okay.
And I love that part. You know, I was doing it with him. That was before, I don't know how much you know about website development. We were essentially developing directly on our main site. So we would go down a lot.
No
You know, 'cause
staging.
there's no staging, no nothing. It was a lot of fun. And for me, I was by myself. I love that part of the business because you're just thinking all day and you're coming up with product. The challenges came when customers would call and partnerships and other things. I was doing all of that at the same time. So very soon, early on, I realized that I needed to start hiring or this is not going to last for too long.
Let's continue to break down the process. So you're developing a way to sell better and you're taking control of your software. You still need to do you still need to create more videos?
So the first thing I actually did was partner with two providers because I knew there's only so many videos I can create in a short amount of time. So I partnered with two established providers, you know, act as if. Mm-hmm. I made it act as if we were much bigger than we were. And within 3 months of starting this, I had 200 hours of content on the site.
Because you went to a provider and you said, I'm going to pay you to create the videos for me.
No, they already had the videos. I paid them a royalty when I sold them. And I said, look, we market the best. We're doing this for a long time. We have the brand and everybody needs help with distribution, as you know. And so they said, okay, let's give it a shot. And luckily it worked out really well. At the same time, we built our own content, got them accredited. A big part of our business is, you know, we're in every state you can do online content, which is 43 states. Each state has different rules and sort of building all that stuff out is.
Did you focus on New York first?
New York and Virginia.
New York and Virginia. Why Virginia?
Virginia, we happened to be there. We had a relationship there. And they really take their continuing legal education seriously. And we always did very well. So we really built up a market there. And it was just sort of how we built it up. And that was luckily for Virginia is what allowed us to be successful because the first year their deadline was in October. I happened to really start this in August. So I put all my eggs in the Virginia basket and put all the money in marketing from credit cards there.
I see.
And we did really well. And I said, okay, this could work. I remember the first month, very early on, we made $10,000 in 1 month. And it was just me by myself. I remember I went out with my wife to the fanciest restaurant in New York. And I said, we've hit it. This is the big time. I can't imagine how much bigger we're going to get. Like 10,000 in 1 month, unbelievable, like 3 months into it. And we had a nice dinner, and of course, you know, the rest is
now you're doing 500,000 a month,
which you know, as an entrepreneur, I'm sure you've gone through this yourself. You're like, well, we should be much higher than that. Why is that all? It's hard to appreciate where you've gone because you're always thinking the next steps. So,
yeah.
So I keep trying to appreciate it. Obviously, our expenses are much higher, and we're doing a lot more because we're set up our infrastructure for growth, not for where we are today.
So. When I record a course on Mixergy, all I do is I find an entrepreneur who does something extremely well and I have him teach it. I don't need to do accreditation. I don't need to do big camera shoots. I just need them to show what they're doing. For you, you have to get it accredited. You have to find the expert to teach it. You have to do much more. What was the original process for creating your first courses?
To me, you have more of a challenge than me. My goal is to... Our goal is to be the leader, to deliver continuing education to anyone, anywhere, anytime. So not just mandatory, mm-hmm. It's lifelong learning.
But mandatory is terrific because they're required to sign up. You've got good customers coming in.
And thank God for that.
Yeah.
So, but lifelong learning is sort of what we all crave for. So the reason I say you have the harder job is you have to convince people where it's not mandatory to actually buy.
Yes.
And me and you both know there's a lot of great value in your content. The challenge is people don't even think they have the time to watch it or use it. So you have to really show, you have to build that brand where they know that cool factor.
So how did you create the first one?
The first what?
The first courses.
So I cold called attorneys.
And you said teach this topic that other attorneys need to learn.
I said what I would do is I would read the New York Law Journal and I'd see somebody, let's say it was, and this wasn't back then, but just the topic legalization of marijuana. I'd say this is a really interesting topic. You know, we reached attorneys all across the country. As an attorney, the best thing you can do is be an expert in your field, as you know.
Yeah.
Teaching a class and being a faculty member is the best way to do it.
Yeah.
You'll get exposure. You'll get lots of opportunity. And we would love the opportunity for you to teach with us. Have you ever done this before? Once attorneys like to talk, attorneys and entrepreneurs like to talk. So it was just at that point, we didn't have a challenge of finding the right faculty.
So you
was
found the faculty. There. Who wrote the material for them to teach to make sure that you can get it accredited?
So they are. So at this, we can't be experts in every area. So they write the materials, they put it together. In many states, we've been doing this long enough where we're actually become the accrediting body. We get audited, of course, but if we had to send it all to the state, it would be too much.
What about
so
in the beginning?
It was me. I'm an attorney.
I see. So you just looked it over and you said, this looks good to me. This he's an expert, so I can trust him. I've looked at it, and so I feel good about it. It's ready to put out there, and people now have to take this as part of their legal requirement.
But keep in mind, in the beginning, I had to actually send them out for approval.
Oh, who did you send it to?
Every state is different. Like in New York, it's the state regulators. In some states, it's bar associations. So that was some of the challenges. Even figuring it wasn't even easy for me to figure out who to send it to. But now that we've been doing it for so long, we've established credibility. Okay. So they say, okay, you know what you're doing. We have now 5 program attorneys on staff. They review the content.
Wow.
And that's how we kind of figure out if it's works.
Are you paying the lawyers to teach?
We don't generally pay attorneys. It's volunteer basis. Mm-hmm. Same way, any question, well, why would they do it? The same way I'm talking to you today, because one of the things I fundamentally believe in most of our faculty do, teaching is the best form of learning. In order for me to be able to tell you about my company and give it to you in a way you understand it and actually you get something out of it, I really have to know that topic really well. So every time I talk about it, in my head, I'm cementing a little bit more. So that's how attorneys look at it as well.
Yeah, and I talked to an entrepreneur yesterday that I wanted to come on and teach a course, and we were just going back and forth, and he said, well, if I had to go do this at a conference, it cost me this much to get out there, this much time. All you need is an hour of setup and another hour to actually record it. Done.
Yeah.
But people who ask me about this are surprised that guests don't ask to be paid, and it wouldn't be ethical, I think, for me to pay you. Even TMZ doesn't pay for interviews.
Yeah.
What often happens is the opposite. People want to pay me to be interviewed, and I have to say that's not right either.
100%. It's a credibility thing. So one thing, and I don't want to interview you. I didn't realize you actually have people just talking and teaching classes, not just interviews as well.
And for that, what we do is we used to do all screencasts where I would say, if you're good at something, just turn on your screen and walk me through. What I've realized is that's pretty. It's pretty laggy. And so I have them do the screenshots. That way I can also approve it beforehand we walk through it.
Well, we should talk after this.
I'll show you the setup that we do, and I'd love to see your setup too.
Yeah. Perfect. Anybody else who wants to get involved, talk to us as well.
Actually, I'd love to have some kind of a group of people who all teach online just to see what software they're using, to understand what issues they're having, get some help. Maybe like a mastermind of that would be helpful.
Courses on Udemy, or you interviewed Udemy founder, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, they seem to figure it out in terms of what they've done. Great product, great idea. It looks really good.
Yeah.
Have you ever put your content on there?
Yes, I was one of the first ones when they wanted to test out the idea of selling other people's courses. And I just went over my books yesterday and I saw, well, I'm still getting money from that.
Oh, so you are making money from that.
It's nothing great. Yeah. It's just I wanted them to be able to experiment. And so I said, here, take one of mine. And I didn't expect to get anything out of it, but I'm glad that I did.
I'll say this, in the education space, I don't know how familiar you are with lynda.com.
Mm-hmm.
They have become the forefront now that they've just raised $104 million after doing that. I saw her speak recently at the Education Innovation Summit. It blew my socks off because everyone thinks it's an overnight success. The reason she's been so successful is because of her and the content. She had best-selling books ahead of time. They had live events and the way they do that and their philosophy. But that has been what everybody in our business, and I consider us in the same business, who are doing continuing and lifelong learning. We say, okay, look, somebody has proven you can be a really successful because they just do web design and development and stuff like that without having that mandatory component. Now there's lots of money trying to chase, and they're calling themselves the lynda.com of entrepreneurship, the lynda.com of this. So I don't know if you've heard that, but there's a tremendous amount of opportunity in education and online education, and we're all trying to figure it out. We're in the top or the bottom of the first inning, as people say.
All right, so I see how you're building content. I see how you're building your software. Let's talk about how you're getting customers a little bit more. You said that you put your ad buys on your credit cards. What were you doing in the beginning to get customers in the door? Where did you spend that money?
So I speak a lot as well about how we started our company. And I say we started as a marketing business that happened to sell educational products. Because I knew without having people knowing about you, it doesn't really matter how good the product is. So what we first started with was direct mail. We'd buy the list and then we'd send it out. Google AdWords, we put it on there as well. And then email lists and doing our own email. And that's how we started. And then we've constantly expanded that significantly. Now we do print, we do other online areas. Everywhere in any way you can sort of reach or be reached, we work really hard to do that. We send millions of postcards a year, millions of emails a month, and it's every month, every year, it gets harder and harder because the space itself gets more and more crowded, and the price goes lower and lower. And a lot of bar associations look at us as the enemy because we're the largest presence of the this online providers that are providing lower cost education. And we are now that 35 person company, and there's a lot of one person companies who were me 6 years ago. And so you have to constantly be innovating and figuring out how to keep growing. Because in my mind, if you're not growing in this business, you're slowly dying. And I really try to look at us as a SaaS model as we evolve, a software as a service model. A lot of people I know are in service businesses where they have a client, they have to work with them, and all of our clients and customers are online buying and using our product when we're sleeping or when we're doing other things, they're using it and getting really good value out of it.
So I haven't heard of a lot of entrepreneurs who use direct mail, postcards, letters to get people online and to buy from them. I guess it's effective for you, but it doesn't seem like an easy thing to figure out. How does a guy who has some experience selling banner ads at 24/7 and a law degree figure out how to do direct mail?
I mean, first of all, there's nothing to figure out. You buy, you contact the bar association. You ask them if they have a list of attorneys, whose deadlines are coming up. If they say yes, you pay them money, and then you have to hire a company to print it and design it. So it's more about having the thought, I'm going to do this, and I'll take the risk. And I'll give my dad credit for that in the beginning. My dad is always, he's a very optimistic, entrepreneurial person. And when I first started, he said, spend the money. Spend the money. He said, all advertising works. Some just takes longer than others to mature.
But David, it is hard because if I send out an email today and it doesn't work out, or run a banner ad online and it doesn't work out, I'll know in the beginning of my experiment that it doesn't work out. I'll be able to adjust an hour later and see if my adjustment worked. I'll be able to keep adjusting until I figure it out, and then I blow it out. With direct mail, you have to buy the list, then you have to go and have somebody send it and all that. So how did you know what to say, or was it just so easy back then because there wasn't a lot of competition?
No, it wasn't easy. We made mistakes. The first mailing that we did, I went for the cheapest thing. It was like a thin piece of paper, and it was the ugliest thing you can think of, but it made money. And so we constantly make mistakes. And I will say this, over the past 6 years, and I know for me personally, it's been harder and harder in direct mail. And I think it's just a direct result of people literally not looking at their mail. I have bills that I don't pay sometimes because I put it aside. I'm like, why are you still sending me mail? And so I think not just our industry, every industry is being hurt. And it is costly. So it's something by the way, we track everything to the T. That's what's allowed us to be, that's to answer your question. Everything has a unique landing page, a unique area. So I know if it's done well, and if it has, then I know I can spend more money. If I couldn't track it, I would probably have been in trouble.
If somebody's listening to us and says, hey, you know what? I heard a lot about Google Ads. I've heard a lot about banners, of course, but I hadn't heard anyone talk about doing direct mail to get customers to online businesses. I'd like to learn more. Is there a place where you recommend they can go and learn more about it?
They can email me directly at david@furthered.com. Nobody will, maybe one person. Nobody ever takes up on that, but I'll be happy to help anybody who wants to do it.
You talked about optimism. But where is that note? There was a note here in my from your conversation with Jeremy where you said that you had to learn optimism. There it is. I program myself every day to be optimistic. It was this one sentence that I just had to make really big on my screen to make sure I ask you.
Yeah.
How do you do it?
I'm a big proponent of personal development books and audiobooks, and I work with a coach. I'm reading different books right now. One of the books that I give out to everyone is the Success Principles. The first principle is take 100% responsibility for your life, and it's a really big one that most people don't do. And I find that is very, I find it, the peaks where things are going well are not as good as they seem, and the bottoms are not as low as you think. But I get caught up in it very often where I'm very stressed and I feel like the world is falling apart. And it's usually on a very small issue. Generally, for me, the biggest challenge is it's not about the business, it's about other people. And if you were to ask me what one of the biggest challenges have been for the company is just managing people effectively. It is just something you constantly have to work on. So for me, it all the biggest thing that I got out of one of the in terms of my own mindset is the frame of mind. And this is also talked in lots of books. It's talked in The Secret and is in life you can't control the weather, you can't control politics, you can't control the your wife, your husband, you can't control your employees or boss. The only thing you can control is how you think and how you feel. And it was huge for me when I realized that the only thing you control is how you think and how you feel, because I'd have an employee come in and I would say, okay, this is what I need you to do, and I need it done by tomorrow, and they would agree to it. The next day it would happen, they wouldn't do it. I said, I must have said something wrong. So I'd say it again and it wouldn't happen. Then I had the same another person come in, I'd say that, and it would be done in like 2 hours. And then I realized the only difference in the scenario was that person. And it was them who decided if they wanted to do it or not. And that really helped in my management skills. So,
Let me see if I can understand this more. You're saying that there, obviously, like most people, you have highs and lows.
yeah.
When you're at a low, what goes through your head? What are you saying to yourself? Is it things like, why does nobody listen to me? Why can't I
No,
do.
no. So what I'm thinking, so first a couple things. One, I realized, when you're not, that's it gives you contrast, because when you're not the space, and you hear about like celebrities who like sort of overdose or go crazy and they're stressed out or whatever it is, you're always thinking, don't they realize that nobody cares? Like this is just a joke to, this is just gossip for us, and they're taking it so seriously. Or someone unfortunately commits suicide, and you're just thinking, what could be so bad? But when you're in those moments where everything's so stressful, it allows me to realize, oh my God, the smallest of things, breaking a commitment to somebody that I didn't mean to can really frustrate me, or not, or the biggest challenge is, or someone doesn't believe in me and you get frustrated over that, or I'm not sure how to make the next step. It's generally not being able to make a decision is what leads to that a
Okay,
lot.
so it's I don't know how to take the next step. I don't know how to make this decision. That
Yeah.
kind of thing. We all have had that, especially entrepreneurs, because there is no
It's
clear path where you take this class, then you take that class, then you do this exactly right, and the next thing, and you're boom, a successful entrepreneur.
correct.
So when you get in that point, when that place, what do you do to get yourself out of it?
Many things. The biggest thing for me has been I journal almost every day. I work with a coach who is amazing, and I'll recommend her to anyone, Kim Aides. And feel free to contact me about that. But one of the things that she does is I journal, and she actually sees the journals, and then we speak once a month. Is when I write out my thoughts, oh my God, it clears so much up. And most people don't do that.
What do you write that's helpful?
If I can't think of what to write first off, I just do a transcript of what happened that day before. Because too often you're sitting down, you're like, I don't know what to write. Great, don't think about it, just write what happened. And then once I do that, you start thinking, okay, and then it breaks it down. And you just sort of analyze the problem, how you feel and what you're going through. And sort of before you know it, I'm one of those people who just sort of starts connecting the dots. Once you start getting that down, when I'm actually typing it, when you're typing or writing, you're thinking a little bit slower. And the problem, always what happens, the problem does not seem as challenging as you thought it
If
was.
you see it on paper, you realize, oh, it's not as big as I thought it was when it was just floating around in the back of my head.
100%,
I
because it's
see.
organized.
Okay, so
For
now that
me,
it's less painful because you see it on paper, you still have to do something about it. What else do you write to help you figure out what to do about the problem?
a lot of the times when I'm trying to make a decision, I also create a checklist of yes and no's. So this is a good reason for this. This is a good reason not to do it, and I'll look at that as well. And then ultimately, the last thing I do is I say, okay. I'll never have the answer here because that's the world we're in. But I can't keep going forward. This is the decision I'm going to make. And as soon as you do that, you don't care if it was right or wrong. It's gone and you move forward. The challenge as an entrepreneur, and this is one of the things I've had to work with, and you hear lots of people complaining about entrepreneurs, is when you make a decision, what happens if 2 days later you're like, well, what did I just do? And you've already told everyone about that decision. So I've made a rule, any sort of big decisions or decent sized decisions, I give myself now 24 hours to let it sit in on me. And I found half of the things that I would have told people, I don't tell them anymore. They're more, as entrepreneurs, I'm sure we have a lot of impulses. And that's how we got our business started. That's how we're good and we're fun. But other people, especially employees in your company, they can't handle that. That's one thing that has helped me as well. I just take that time to absorb that. And I think when you're quiet and you're writing things down, I'm lucky to have an amazing wife who went out in the challenges in business. She's much smarter than me, and she helps me work through anything. It's you realize when as an entrepreneur how important a good partner is.
Yeah, I had a friend who
just
wanted.
I gotta save this part for her.
Sorry,
I gotta save this part for her and send it.
You should. I had a friend who just wanted to date and be with dumb women. I say be with because he didn't want to marry them, but he wanted to be with them. Yeah. And then one day he heard as I was talking to Olivia about what was going on with me, he says, "Wait, this is a mistake I've made. I can't talk to these women who I'm with because I intentionally didn't want anyone who was going to challenge me."
Yeah. Kelly challenges me more than, and I have 4-year-old twins, so they challenge me too.
All right. So, and them and Kim. Kim Aide, is that her last name?
Kim, she's
the coach.
ADES. Yeah.
ADES.
Pretty sure. It's called Frame of Mind Coaching, if you Google it.
You see, I actually was typing this out. I'm sure a lot of people in the audience were.
Yeah, Frame of Mind Coaching is the best way to find her.
I do that too. I journal now this year almost every single day. And if there's something I'm wrestling with, I will put down what my concerns are about it. Just write them down in a list.
Yeah.
And often that makes them start to go away. And then I start to question them and that goes away. And
let me just throw one thing that Kim did when I first started working with her was a game changer for me. It's sort of the 5-year vision or the 6-month vision. You talk as if you've made it already. So you're ready there. And then you walk backwards on how you got there. Because too often we try to predict how we're going to get somewhere. And then when we start saying, oh, well, that's not possible. But if you're already talking past tense, and that's sort of how you realize where you want to get to. And that's helped me in my personal life and my business life as well, sort of achieve where we're at.
And it undoes a problem that a lot of people have with their journals where they will just go into the darkest places. They will talk about everything that stinks in their lives and they just put it on there and it allows them to just wallow in that frustration instead of find a way to work themselves out of it.
Yeah, I think it's so, it's what you focus on grows. And I really try to focus. And this is where you take ownership over things. Most people complain about things that they can control. This is what he talks about, the success principles. Nobody complains about gravity. Plane crashes happen, things get, people hurt the gravity, you can't control it. But most things you complain about, you complain to your husband about your boss, you can complain to your boss about your husband or whatever it is. So it's a big part of taking that. Sorry for me preaching.
No, I'm glad. I want to talk about this stuff. But I also want to talk about some of the business issues. So you're building this place up, you're building up your business, and you're hiring a sales team. And something happens. What happens?
Oh yeah. So I knew. So we were talking about direct mail. We talked about online. One of the things that always bothered me was, okay, that's great, but I'm still waiting for people to come to the site. How do I constantly reach out to them? I said, let me build a sales force. I knew, at least I was smart enough to know I had no idea how to do it, and nor did I want to. And luckily enough, I found somebody who would consult for me in the beginning to build it. And he ended up hiring 3 or 4 people, smart guy, and then he became part of the infrastructure that I asked, like, well, if he left, who's going to manage his people? Ended up hiring him full-time. Long story short, everybody has their own personal issues, everything's. We built up that whole sales force to 20 people in a completely different office. It actually brought in close to $1 million in revenue. And then it sort of had diminishing returns, and it turns out that some of the top salespeople were, in essence, stealing from us, like 3 or 4, all the top people under his wing.
How?
Whether or not he knew about it, I didn't care. He either knew or should have known. I didn't want to figure that out. I had too many things to worry about. So I had fired about four or five people in one day, including him. At that time, I had already promoted him to COO because he was a smart guy. I needed a partner. I was just by myself, literally. And he helped me manage the day-to-day. And it was a big moment for the company. And it was the best thing that could have happened to us. But it took a lot to sort of recombine everything and grow up from there. And we've gone through many stages like that.
How was the sales department supposed to work? They were going to do outbound calls to lawyers and tell
and
them
about... We have the sales department again today, and they do outbound calls to attorneys, correct?
Okay. And you just buy a list, and they have a process of calling them.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, yeah?
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
When you say that they stole from you, how do they steal from you?
It's intricate, but essentially... We were getting money. Let's say we were bringing customers in from one form of marketing before they were able to sign up. They were able to get the leads, call them their own leads, so they would get the commission on it. So they were calling leads that weren't theirs, essentially.
You have an interesting model where anyone who's listening to us can go to any one of your websites or find them all through furthered.com. Click on, say, the one for accountants or the one for lawyers, and take on lawline.com, take a course for free. And they only pay if they want credit for it. How did you come up with that model?
It sounds corny, but from my heart. So, I mean, two things. One, we did it about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, when Coursera was starting and when edX was happening and lots of free content's going out there. And I said to myself, you know, the year before we had 1 million courses completed on our site to date. And I said, well, how do I get to 10 million courses? Because 1 million is great, but 10 million is even better. And the only thing that I could think about is, well, I know about half of our content is really relevant to businesses, entrepreneurs, HR professionals, individuals. What do I just open up to the public and see what happens? As well as attorneys. I'm so proud of our product. Let me show them what we have. So we decided to open it up to content for free. You still have to, the only thing you have access to is the videos. You can't access the materials or the audio files, just the videos. It worked out really well because it showed our product, it showed our pride in it, and really grew our customer base significantly. And the beauty is once we have somebody on the site, they're generally happy with our product and they stay on long term.
I see. And so what happened to sales after you switched to that model?
It's gone up. We've been going up since, you know, for numbers of reasons. The thing that never happened as much, you know, one of the areas getting into the consumer space or the law school space, we haven't been able to get there yet. And it's still on our radar, but there's such opportunity for digestible content for the public and for law students who are trying to figure out what to do. There's LegalZoom out there, there's Rocket Lawyer, lots of content-based, lots of things for people using legal content. So we created, you can log on with Facebook and all these things. So I don't know how much it's done in public, we've never really tracked that, but it's helped us grow in the legal space for sure. And that is in our back pocket, is still expanding to the next level.
You mentioned lynda.com. My interview with Linda from one of the early days on Mixergy is one of the best source of customers for me. People want to hear how she did it. They come to my site and she breaks it down. And I remember my first question to her was essentially, people don't want to pay for education online. Why are they paying for you? And it was, at the time, no one even believed it, that, you know, that people would pay for education online. But they do if it's done right. What I'm wondering about you is, what did you learn about teaching right online, keeping it entertaining, keeping it interesting enough that people want to take it?
So a couple things. One, when I first started the company in 2007, there's two philosophies that I always had. One, I always thought of us as bigger than CLE. I always knew we were going to be doing more than that. So because of that, I always
CLE meaning continuing legal education.
Correct. Thank you. So I always thought of our product and the technology side of it is, if it wasn't mandatory, would people buy this? So that was the philosophy. And so I always thought bigger than where we were. So we have built in so many great features, just to name a couple, smart notes, we have timestamp notes that actually go right to the video. So lots of people take notes, and then they have it, they're done. They can email to themselves. They're all clickable and linkable. Cause the whole thing is, once you watch a course, you don't ever have to want to watch it again. You just want to have the information that's in there. So we created features like that. We create our custom playlists that have questions and answers, very easily swappable videos and slides, all these things. We custom built everything, so it's a really easy feature. But for me, I don't think we're anywhere where we need to be, because the challenge is, if it wasn't, still at the end of the day, it's hours and hours of video, mainly what they call, not, I won't say talking heads, but not interactive enough. And so that's one of the challenges of our company today, is how do we build to that next level, that curriculum model, that model where that you can really sort of say, okay, you start here, I want practical knowledge, and at the end you get here. And the challenge is, when you have a deadline-driven business and you're trying to build a better content, they're almost two separate things at the same time. I think that's the future where we need to get to.
So it is kind of talking heads at its most basic, but when done right, it doesn't feel like it, and there are other elements. So I want to understand some of those things that you do to make it feel less like that. One thing that I heard early on was multiple cameras, so that it feels like it's constantly moving. Yeah. Another thing is notes, so people are interacting and they could save their spots. What else are you doing?
So it's, first of all, it starts with the most fundamental thing, really good speakers. You know, we go through a real process where we screen our speakers.
What's the process to make sure that someone's interesting?
Very similar to you. We do pre-interviews. So we do pre-interviews, and we do that. We understand who they are, what they're doing. Generally, most of our speakers have spoken before. And from that process, you get a good sense of how it's going to go, as you guys do as well, I'm sure. So from there, then we webcast all of our courses live. That came from a challenge. A lot of our innovations came from challenges. One of the states we were in said, no longer can you do on-demand courses. They have to be live. We never had it done before. And so we built it ourselves, and it was awesome. And so now we do all of our courses live. We do 40 hours live a month. And
why does live make it feel less like talking heads?
You can actually ask questions to the faculty.
People are watching online. They type in a question, and it feels real.
It feels real. And I think people like to know that it's fresh content, and they also like a time. Say, okay, just like employees want clear direction, they say, okay, from 2 to 12 or whatever, there's this program. So they like to know it's the very fresh content. They could ask the faculty a question if they want, so that really helps. And lastly, the practical reasons, in many states it's mandatory, so it allows us. But that's just the practical area of it.
But I can see how it helps.
It helps there. I'm going to stop there because I lost my train of thought. I don't want to just keep talking.
No, that was helpful. I wanted to see what you do to keep things interesting. Because it was Jason Fried, I think, of 37 Signals, who said that teaching is the new marketing, right? And so if more of us are going to be marketing this way, we have to find ways to keep it interesting. And it's not so easy to just look at a camera and keep things interesting.
A couple things about that. One, where we've moved, or we're moving from a service-based economy to a information-based economy. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing. Two, you can listen. When I listen to stuff on YouTube, I listen to things online, I listen to everything at 1.2 to 1.5 times speed, because you can hear a lot faster than people can talk. So that's why you can only listen to things for a few minutes. I mean, it's very hard to watch long videos. We're too busy. We can't do it. So I think that's the challenge to me and you. And I'm really looking forward to seeing how you've done it. And even with Udemy, they've broken that out. But I think the future of education is more of a collaborative model, informal learning, where, yes, there is the sort of faculty member. But the thing is, the 30 entrepreneurs watching this video at the same time it was, or throughout the course, have more knowledge than me or you put together. And if they can sort of work together to collaborate, sort of like the Wikipedia thought or the open source thing for PHP or anything like that, that's sort of where we need to get to. How we transform and make this more interesting, we're all trying to figure that out. Because certainly, I don't know if you know Coursera or edX, those aren't so interesting. I mean, those are just literally lectures that they're with quizzes and format, but they're getting people to do it. So we don't even know how it's going to look in a couple of years, because we can't figure it. We didn't know this was going to exist, you know, the iPhone or whatever it is. So.
You know what? It's for Linda, it's, I'm not saying easier, but it's more natural, because when you're watching something on lynda.com, you're meant to use the software that you're watching them demonstrate. For legal education, you can't do something. And as you said, people think faster than they listen, than others talk. So it's easy for them, for viewers' minds to wander. We need something for them to do.
With that said, I still think everybody's still not sure how Lynda's been so successful, because they're not that much. I've seen some of their courses. They're good. And I haven't watched too many. And they're all, there's lots of good content, but their good content is not that much different than other good content.
I see.
So we're all just sort of trying to figure that out as well. Maybe it's the market. Maybe it's the brand. Maybe it's lots of different things. But I think a lot of people had a wake-up call when they realized how much money they raised. They said, oh, wow, okay, there's something to be said here. But it's inspiring to see that, because what I love about this, and I love about this conversation with me and you, and the reason what I found out with True NYC, when you go to school and you go to college, you're surrounded by people who just happen to be in the same school as you. Now in this day and age, it's very easy for us to surround ourselves with like-minded individuals, other people who love doing interviews and learning from people. And that's what the new form of learning is, because of information technology.
Let me do a quick plug here, speaking of that. And then I want to ask you a personal question that I've been saving for the end.
Okay.
The plug is for Mixergy Premium. I mentioned earlier that this is kind of an amateur operation. I record everything, including the courses, just using the webcam that's built into my computer. I think it's fairly simple to do something like this today. If you're curious about how to set it up, I think the first thing to do is to go sign up to Mixergy Premium right now and just spy on me. See what I'm doing to get to build an online education site. And what you'll see is basically what we talked about today. I bring entrepreneurs on who have one skill that they're exceptionally good at. Maybe it's writing content and get content marketing. And so I got Leo from BufferApp.com to come and teach it. Maybe it's about how to get traffic in by buying ads. And so I got Max of What Runs Where to talk about how to do it. His whole software is about helping online marketers create better ads. So as a favor to me, I said, come teach this, and in return, you're going to get a big audience that's going to watch you. And so if you go to MixergyPremium.com right now and you sign up, you'll see how my operation is set up, and I think you'll be inspired once you see how simple it can be. If you're ready to take it to the next level, one of the courses in MixergyPremium.com is something I call Interview Your Heroes. Interview Your Heroes. I've got to articulate my own pitch a little bit better. And the idea there is, I started out by saying I want to interview the people who I admire, and I'm doing it right here. And if you're interested in doing something similar in your space, you can watch the Interview Your Heroes program, and you'll see exactly how I do it. Everything from the mics that I use to the recording software that I have to how I ask the guests to help me promote it, and how I find guests who will help guests who will help me get traffic. It's all there at MixergyPremium.com. And one last thing, Lynda was one of my early interviewees, and I sat her down and I said, look, everyone else is ragging on you for trying to sell online education. I'm gonna shut up and listen. I wanna learn how you did it so that I can do it myself. And what I learned from that interview is what's helping me build Mixergy Premium. And so I urge you to go, and if you're interested in this at all, go to MixergyPremium.com, take my courses, watch how I build, take Interview Your Heroes, and watch that interview with Lynda. And I'm hoping that you'll do that. You'll be inspired by David's story, by my experience. And at some point, you'll achieve something just as big and exciting, and I'll get to interview you. MixergyPremium.com. I guarantee you'll love it. And you know my guarantee is good, because guys like David would never trust me to sit and do an interview here. He would kick my butt if I ever disappointed someone and didn't give them their money back.
And I would say that was awesome. You're really good.
Thank you.
The thing with anything, with any book, with any video, with anything you read, the experience is in EO, Entrepreneurs Organization, which I'm part of,
yep.
The saying that we have is own your own experience. So your job is to provide good content, make it easy and organizable, but you can't take that and help people get to the next level. They have to use that themselves. So that's the ownership part of it. So that's the best part, is knowing that everyone who's watching and doing things like that has the ability to sort of make that next step. My biggest challenge has always been, when I was doing True NYC, and that's why I'd love to talk to you offline, is how do you translate entrepreneurship to an online, that you can tell people how to do stuff, but ultimately, to me, the biggest thing is attitude. And I think when you think of self-help, you sort of poo-poo it, because you think of all the scams and you think all the people out there, but I've realized so much of it is true. It's all in the head. Everything else will work itself out. And I think that's the hardest part to really get out there, because you can learn how to invest in real estate. It doesn't mean you're going to do it. So that's one of the things that I is my mission in life, sort of to a really personal development type program that's geared towards entrepreneurs who are already doing things and helping them grow.
I agree with you. And when I've asked some entrepreneurs about it, people who've listened to me for a long time will recognize this statement. I will ask an entrepreneur about the head game, about the way their self-talk or their insecurities, and they'll say things like, "What are you, Barbara Walters now? What are you, Dr. Phil?" And they shut me down. And so I kept asking and I keep asking, but I decided, all right, if the interviewees aren't going to help me, then I'm just going to work with some people in the audience to figure this stuff out. I have a big enough audience that I can take a small subsection of them and we can experiment together. And we did, and we've made a lot of progress. What you talked about with your work with Kim sounds right in line with what we've been developing privately here at Mixergy. I mean, I'm wearing bracelets now right here. These are for meditation, one of the experiments that we're doing. And to see if you could focus your mind on what you want and through meditation, keep your mind from wandering to all the things you don't want. Like, what if David thinks I'm boring? What if no one comes to Mixergy Premium? What if I stunk with the way that I sign people up, you know?
And the biggest part is all I'm thinking about is me, not you. So once you realize everyone's just concerned about themselves, it makes it easier. All right, do you work with the YAC at all?
No, I don't.
All right, we'll talk offline.
Okay, I'd love it.
What's my personal question?
Personal question is, you're you have a hard time giving up control, and apparently, especially in the air, you're a flyer.
Oh, no. So I'm not a flyer. I mean,
you're
I
not obsessed with flying and flight?
No, yes.
Okay.
No, so I don't want you, I'm not a pilot.
Okay. I misunderstood this note here. Okay.
So what I'll, here's the 2 cents, just the funny part about that is, so yeah, I've paraglided on solo, I've done skydiving, and I've taken flying lessons. But I still get a fear in airplanes, but I love flying because that's the biggest fear and that's the biggest freedom. But I was talking to one of my friends who's a therapist, and I was telling her all about that. She's like, "You realize what that's about?" I'm like, "No." She's like, "You're giving up control to somebody else for that time." And I'm like, "Oh my God, that's exactly what it is." Because if I was in the cockpit and I knew exactly what was going on, I would feel better about it. And it's just a really good analogy for entrepreneurs to think about. And I want to write the book someday, and I'll share it now because I don't know if I'll ever write it. So someone else does, God bless them. Do you want to be the pilot or the passenger?
I think
in entrepreneurship, yeah. I think there's a lot of correlations between.
Can an entrepreneur be the passenger?
I guess to some extent, because it's the way I know entrepreneurship is being the pilot, you know, so wanting to be that. But you can be the passenger if you know what you do best at and let everyone else sort of take control from there. And so for me, that's been one of the areas where I fly all the time. And you're always afraid, well, this time I start getting overconfident, maybe something's going on, something's going to happen. But my one of my goals is I hope to come back at some day and say, I am a pilot and I have a license, and that'll be a lot of fun.
I would love to hear that here on the follow-up Mixergy interview. And since you mentioned the book, I've got to tell you that the founder of DuckDuckGo, the search engine that's competing with Google, he came on here to say that he was working on I asked him, I said, what happened to the book that you're working on? He said, I had to put it aside because DuckDuckGo is growing so much. Well, this guy in the audience, Justin Mayers, heard that, emailed him and said, I want to help you with the book. I think Justin at the time was still in school. They have written the book. I just got to see him in person here in San Francisco. The book's already done. They sent it out to the editor. So just because he said in the interview that he wants to finish this book or doesn't have enough time to do it, even though he wants to, the book ended up happening. So I hope people reach out to you.
I'll send you a link. I don't know if you can put it on the video. I interviewed Mike Michalowicz, and if you haven't interviewed him, this should be your next person.
I know him, and I got to get him back on.
Okay, so he's written 2 books. He did a course for me that's free that tells, because he wrote a book, The Toilet Paper Entrepreneur.
What is it? Sorry. Toilet paper.
The first one is The Toilet Paper Entrepreneur, and the second one is The Pumpkin Plan. He self-published it and did an amazing job selling lots of copies and how he did it. He told me all the secrets on how he did it and some really good ones on how he grew the book and got a lot of people to use it. And it was awesome. I'll share that with you.
I would like to listen to that too.
Yeah. You'll get a lot out of it. So it was good.
Cool. All right, send it over. Thank you so much for doing this. Again, guys, if you want to check out the website just to get an understanding of the business that we've been talking about, it's furthered.com. David, thank you so much for being a part of this.
Andrew, it's been a pleasure, and I can't wait till we do big things together. I can see the vision now, so it's
I would
gonna be
love it. I wish you weren't in New York or that I was in New York. I wish you were here in
great. Oh,
San Francisco. I was in New
San
York, so we'd
Fran,
meet
New
up.
York, it's good. Well, we got both coasts.
We'll make it work. Thank you all for being a part of it. Bye, guys.